Hello and a very warm welcome to the Cardiff Podcast. My name is Alistair Love. After another enforced break, I'm delighted to say we're back and our guest is former politician and tireless equality campaigner Siobhan Corrier. Siobhan was a Cardiff Council cabinet member who had a very public falling out with the Labour Party and now works as head of inclusion for Action for Children. She also campaigns for sepsis awareness with her partner and past podcast guest, Terence Canning, and sits on the board as an executive director for the Welsh Amateur Boxing Association. This woman has energy to burn, and we cover a lot of ground in our 40 minutes or so at her home in Land of North. It sounds very much like this.
Right, we're here with Siobhan Corrier. Thank you so much for coming on the Cardiff Podcast.
You're very welcome.
It's a real pleasure to have you. Siobhan is a friend and colleague in Action for Children. But there's significantly more to your bow than that, and I think we'll get into that now. I mean, fundamentally, when we think about yourself, you're very much a campaigner. What's been your driving force? What lit that fire? You've got a big drive for social justice, campaigning on any number of issues. Where does that come from?
It probably comes from the fact that my father was a trade unionist. Mm-hmm. So I remember growing up when there were lots of strikes, and him going out at stupid o'clock to find out who was crossing various picket mm-hmm. lines.
Yeah. Who did he work for?
So he worked for BT, mm-hmm. and then he was seconded to the Communication Workers Union.
Yeah.
Probably quite popular in some circles and very unpopular with managers. Mm. Sounds sort of familiar. But that's where it comes from, and I think that I was always interested in criminal justice. So I did some, I did an A-level in sociology, mm-hmm. and I did a degree in criminal justice and policing.
Yeah.
And just interested really in injustice and why it occurs. And then I guess I got quite a lot of energy, so I tend to use that energy to campaign really on various things.
Yeah. Sorry, if you can, for the listener, you can hear a lot of rustling. We were also joined by Archie, Siobhan's gorgeous dog. So he's very welcome, but you may hear a bit of background noise, which is fine. Right, so, and that really feeds into your role with Action for Children now, doesn't it? Because you're head of inclusion.
Yes.
So tell us a bit about how that works.
So basically, I'm head of inclusion. I cover the UK. So Action for Children has got, basically, it delivers services in all four nations. It's got about 4,000 staff. And I lead on equality and diversity. So basically trying to make the workforce culture as inclusive as possible, raise awareness around forms of discrimination or injustice, mm-hmm. and basically put in place projects to make us as inclusive as possible. So for me, being able to indirectly improve outcomes for children linked with equality, diversity and inclusion is like basically my dream job.
Yeah. Bloody good at it as well, I have to say. Right, so basically then, given this role, I'm fascinated to know how you feel now. Given Brexit and Trump and things like that, it seems to have lifted a lid on Pandora's box, and people of a certain persuasion now seem to think they've got carte blanche to say whatever the hell they like about any number of issues regarding equality and minorities, etc. All the things you've listed.
Yeah.
Do you feel a bit despairing about that?
The day after the Brexit referendum, I was really despondent, like really upset. Sort of just couldn't believe it really, that people had voted to leave something they didn't really understand in the first place. But I think that campaign was the first time I'd really noticed that sort of discriminatory language was becoming mainstream and normalised by people like Farage. Mm. So when Trump got elected, I wasn't even surprised. Mm. But yeah, definitely, there is definitely a narrative whereby people feel that they can say anything they want against people, and they'll put it down to things like freedom of speech and real simple things like that.
Have you noticed an impact in your work?
I never think I'll be out of a job, put it that way. Put it that way. Because, I mean, ideally in an organisation, you wouldn't even have a head of inclusion.
Yeah.
Or
it's great,
you got
it.
Absolutely, yeah. I have noticed it in terms of not long after Brexit, there was a lot more hate crime.
Yeah.
So members of staff contacted me to say, what are we doing around that? somebody mentioned yesterday the Punish a Muslim Day, and how that affected her in terms of being able to do home visits and her own safety. I mean, we definitely need to basically keep the political landscape on our agenda in Action for Children, because it will, at the end of the day, affect people's behaviour, whether that be staff or volunteers or people that access our services. There's definitely an impact.
Strikes me we've made so much progress in the last 20 years. It's almost like a scream to a sort of emergency stop.
Yeah, it feels like that.
Doesn't it feel like
that?
Yeah.
This is the first period, I think, in my adult life where I'm like, God, it does feel like we're going backwards. I haven't felt like that before, I don't think.
Yeah. I don't want to dwell too much on Trump, but...
Arsehole.
You said it, I feel it. So, yeah, but I mean, it's sort of the new normal now.
Out-and-out
racism, out-and-out misogynism.
Yeah, and just racism, misogyny, but, like, he's really stupid. Mm. Like, obviously he's really clever, because he is where he is, but the way he talks and the things that he says, there's no depth to any of it, and people lap it up, and they did with Farage, because he was talking very simply about things.
Yeah.
And people loved it because they thought that he wasn't the establishment, when, you know, he was more establishment than most people.
Well, quite, that's a very striking thing about this whole metropolitan... Oh, God, we could spend hours on this. the metropolitan elite thing, but all that is being driven by people who are so very clearly in the elite, aren't they?
Yeah, exactly, they're well into it.
You know, is a great example of that. And Trump in America is a great example of that. God, we could really go down.
It's like being in work.
Yeah, it is. It really is. But just to sort of go back to Trump, I don't want to dwell on him too much. But again, is that added to the despair you might feel about day to day politics? Because there are parallels in British politics. We can't get away from it, can we?
Yeah.
Whether it's anti-Semitism in the Labour Party, Islamophobia in the Conservative Party, these things are coming out into the open, aren't they?
Yeah, just for me, I guess it makes me feel more detached from politics than ever before, really. Like, I feel like I don't have anything in common with a lot of politicians.
Yeah.
And definitely the ones in positions of real power.
Yeah.
So, that's how I feel. It just feels like really detached, like just so far away from reality now.
Yeah.
That it's difficult to think how you can truly influence things. But you've just got to keep carrying on, haven't you?
I mean, famously, you left the Labour Party, you know, with accusations of sexism and bullying.
Yeah.
How do you reflect on that time? Do you think it's changed? Or do you just think, you know, given everything that's coming out elsewhere, that is kind of the prevailing culture?
Yeah, it feels like a million years away for a start.
Yeah.
It feels like it never even
sorry
happened.
Sorry to bring it up on this,
If you haven't got the basics right at local government and constituency party level, and nobody really wants to admit that, then what's built on top of that in terms of different structures and particularly power, I don't have any faith in it, really. Mm.
So do you think then, for your point of view, you're better off pursuing
campaigns? Yeah, because what I thought to myself was, do you know what, I'm feeling so tired and drained, like emotionally, basically, because so much of my time and energy was on internal politics and not external. And I thought to myself, how am I going to make a difference if it's making me feel like this? So I decided I'm going to leave politics. And, you know, when this job came up, it was just perfect for me.
Yeah.
And I just love working in the charity sector. Mm-hmm. You're surrounded by like-minded people, not just from our own charity, but, you know, across the sector.
Yeah.
And everyone's in it to try and do their best for other people. And I didn't find that in politics.
It certainly feels that way, doesn't it?
Yeah,
the game playing seems to be less. There's more of a single focus, if you like.
Yeah.
I mean,
there's
obviously disagreements on how we get there, but ultimately the game is the same.
Well, yeah, you're not in it for the money, are you?
No, certainly not.
You're in it for something, but it's definitely, you know, not amazingly well paid.
No.
I'm not saying it's poorly paid, but it's not amazing. So, you've got to be realistic and use your skills and experience the way you think you're going to make the most difference, not just for other people as well, but for your own peace of mind, so for your own emotional health. And I guess it was only really once I'd left politics that I really started to think about, actually, how did that affect me emotionally, and what do I need to do in the future to make sure I'm not in the place I was at that time? So, you know, just things like looking after yourself better, planning your time, not wasting your time on things that aren't going to matter to anyone, things like that, really.
Can you try and describe then the kind of impact that had on you on a day-to-day basis when you were battling with all that? Thankfully, from a distance now, the Labour Party in Cardiff seems to be quite peaceful by their standards, but at the time, just try and give us a flavour of how that made you feel.
Exhausted, disappointed, because you go in it with fresh eyes. You want to make a difference.
Yeah.
Amazing to get elected.
Yeah.
Tired, emotional, starting to lack your own ability. Mm. All the things basically when you're just not enjoying something, but you don't realise it, and it's building up and it's building up. And a real sense of, why is no one listening to me?
Yeah.
Like a real sense of, when I went to see the General Secretary of Welsh Labour, and I said, these are the things that's happened, and I gave examples, why did he just ignore them? Mm. So it was like I didn't understand what was going on.
So you just felt powerless, effectively, and I mean that in the truest sense of the word. I mean, you were a high-profile cabinet member, and nothing was addressed.
All of it finished. The reason why I left the Labour Party in the end was because I had a meeting with the chair of Welsh Labour, and I said, you really need to investigate what the claims that I'm making.
Yeah.
And he listened, and we had a meeting, and then he didn't get back to me, so I had to follow up with him, and he said, basically, we're not investigating. Like you said in your meeting, you need to get on with your life. And I was like, wow. So I was like, thanks for that. Thanks. So that was it, really.
Yeah.
It was like the best and worst time of my life.
Yeah.
Because obviously I experienced so many different things. I met lots of new people. Mm. And it's something that only a tiny majority of people even do. But at the same time, it just wasn't what I don't know what I expected, but it was like, I don't like this. I don't like the environment.
Yeah.
I don't like meetings that constantly overrun when you've got kids to get back to.
Yeah.
And then everyone's rolling their eyes because you've got kids. All that sort of stuff.
What's particularly galling about that is that nominally, Labour is the party of equality,
rubbish.
Isn't it? And is it because in Wales, let's try not to dwell too much on it, but it's quite important, isn't it? Because given the wider issues that the Labour Party faces. So, there's this, it was set up for equal rights and workers' rights and all that sort of stuff. It is quite galling, isn't it?
It is, because the problem that you've got in the Labour Party in Wales is there's two camps, and there is, that you're either in one camp or you're in the other camp. You're basically in the left-wing camp or the right-wing camp. And it's all about getting into those positions of power. So if you look at the Welsh leadership contest and the fact that they struggle to get a woman on the ballot, and everyone's blaming Mark Drakeford's candidates, and everyone's it's like, well, Carwyn Jones committed to becoming a feminist government, and then before he resigned, he didn't even tell anyone he was resigning. But actually, if he'd been truly interested in equality, he would have said to all his group, who are all apparently on the same side, whatever we do, we have to make sure amongst us that they're, even to say it, one woman.
Mm.
But like, even that wasn't done. But the way that you lead equality is from the very top. So if you haven't got a leader that is not just committed to it, but undertaking the activity to reach equality, then you're just scrambling around, aren't you?
Yeah, and paying lip service.
So, equality, inclusion, everything is about leadership. Mm. And not just the commitment, but the actually doing the do.
Mm.
And about being authentic. So, just being able to be yourself. And I felt when I was in politics that people had a perception of me, or they wanted me to be a woman there, but in the corner, quiet. And then when I'm like, clearly not going to do that, they can't believe it.
Yeah.
And I can remember saying to one councillor, she said to me, you've got to stop asking questions all the time. I said, well, in my profession, in social work, that's what you do.
Mm.
To make an informed decision, you like look at all the evidence in front of you. I said, so look, just because I don't sit in the corner fluttering my eyelashes, that's not my problem, that's your problem. It's that you expect me to behave in a different way, but I don't quite meet your expectation.
Yeah.
So that's your problem.
God, That's a bit depressing, isn't it?
It is, yeah.
It is a bit depressing. So this must make for interesting debates with your dad then, with his trade union history, you know.
Well, he's a communist, so...
Very left, then.
Yeah, he's too left-wing for the Labour Party.
Yeah.
I mean, he was in the Labour Party. Yeah. He was, you know, he's always been active. But yeah, now he's gone too far left even for me.
So where do you vote then? Is that too private a question?
No, not at all. I would vote locally. I would vote for any local candidate that I knew would do the job well for the community. Mm. So basically, it's Labour.
Yeah, yeah.
Welsh Assembly, I would vote Labour. Mm-hmm. And National Government, I would vote Labour.
Yeah.
So even after everything... I haven't got any, there are no other options. There's no other options for me.
Yeah.
Not credible. I did like Leanne Wood a lot, but I'm not a nationalist.
Yeah.
And I think that nationalism can be, you know, detrimental.
Yeah.
So I can't even vote there. Yeah. And obviously I'd rather die than vote Tory.
Well, I feel the same on that. But that's the trouble that for me personally, as a left-leaning individual, it's where do you go?
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Because you know, I do find it very disheartening, the picture locally and nationally. Actually, less so locally, but certainly nationally.
Yeah.
And you just think, where do you go? And
exactly.
I wonder, I think a lot of people are possibly feeling that way.
Yeah, and I think that's why a lot of people, you know, haven't voted. And then what Brexit did then was give people that had never voted the opportunity to vote for something that they didn't really understand. But, I remember being in the pub, the Pineapple, and one of the guys said to me, Siobhan, she'll know. So I said, what? He goes, are you Remain or Leave? Mm. So I said, well, I'm Remain, what are you? He goes, you know what, I'm 50, I've never voted in my life, but I'm voting Leave.
Mm.
And I went, well, why? And he goes, because immigration.
Yeah.
And I was like, I can't really have a conversation with you in the pub about this.
No.
But I was like, that for me was like the stark reality. People came out to vote that have never voted before. And I think if we don't leave the EU, those people will feel disempowered and they'll never vote again.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, is that a good thing or a bad thing? It's like, yeah.
So speaking of your family and everything, let's try and move away from politics for us. We both start weeping. Tell us a bit about your family history, how your family came to Cardiff in the first place.
So both my parents are from Ely.
Mm-hmm.
So my mum's family are Welsh Catholics. And then my dad's grandfather was from the Cape Verde Islands when it was a Portuguese colony.
Yeah.
And his grandfather on his mother's side was from Yemen. Mm. Oh, so his dad were sailors.
Right.
Yeah. So they were all in...
It was the classic.
Yeah, yeah.
Tiger
classic.
Bay
yeah, yeah,
sailors. Yeah,
yeah. Yeah, so they were all in the Navy. My dad was in the Merchant Navy when he was younger. So he grew up in Llanrymney. He was born in Ely, then he moved to Llanrymney, but a lot of his family were the docks.
Yeah.
And my mum grew up, went to Catholic school, primary school and high school, and then I think my dad left school about 14.
Yeah.
My mum left at 16. You know, hardworking people at the end of the day.
Yeah. So did your dad go straight in the Merchant Navy then?
I think so. I don't think he went at 14, but I think he was married to my mum.
Yeah.
Or they were definitely caught in, as they say.
Yeah.
yes, I think he just did that because that was what you did.
Hmm.
Not like an overwhelming desire to do anything. And then he was a plumber, and then after that he joined BT.
Yeah.
I guess like a job for life then, because it was public sector as well, you know, when he joined.
Time, yeah. Had it been the GPO in those days?
Oh God, I don't know. All I remember
is showing my age. I can actually remember the GPO.
All I remember is Busby, and we used to have like staff discos, family discos in the Civil Service Club.
Yeah.
In Sanatorium Road.
Yeah. I remember that place.
Stuff like that was brilliant.
Yeah.
You know, it's a shame we don't do that anymore.
Yeah, sure.
And then my mum had different jobs, Memory Lane. You know, cakes, packing cakes. What was it called? Powell Dufferin.
I know the name.
It was office. She's definitely in an office.
Yeah.
She's worked for quite a while in Arriva Trains, more recently before she retired. And actually, it's quite funny because they brought in uniforms. She was a receptionist. They brought in uniforms, and she was just like, there's no way I'm wearing that. And they were like, no, you have to wear it. It's a uniform. It's mandatory.
Corporate uniform.
She was like, no. She's like, no, I'll wear. I don't mind wearing black trousers and a white top. I'm not wearing that, and I'm not wearing the cravat type thing. So I was like, what did they say? And they said, no, you've got to wear it anyway. She just didn't wear it, and they just never mentioned it again. So I think a bit of my stuff might come from my mother.
Say, I'm hearing echoes. Hearing echoes there. God, working for Arriva Trains ways.
Yes, I know.
Anyway,
gosh.
Yeah, that is another story. So obviously we interviewed Terence not long ago.
Yeah.
Oh my God, it was long ago now. It was back in the summer, wasn't it? How much has sort of the sepsis campaign fired you up?
Well, a lot. We met because his brother died of sepsis. So, I mean, this is the sort of stuff I did love as a local councillor. So when his brother died in 2012, his mum and dad contacted me as the councillor to get a memorial bench.
Right.
So I met them up at Hayley Park, his mum, his dad and his auntie.
Yeah.
And they'd only just buried Mark, so they were still really raw, really upset. Anyway, what happened was basically I got the bench sorted and it just got put there really, really quickly, which has nothing to do with me. It's to do but I kept in touch with his mum and dad. And then Terence came back to Cardiff from London to basically start his life again.
Yeah.
And we became friends then, and we got involved in the Christmas lights in Llandaff North.
Yeah.
So we were part of the sort of working group for that. And that's how we became friends. Mm. And then I started to do like pub quizzes for UK Sepsis Trust.
Yeah.
In fact, the first one I did in the Pineapple, I had to stop because I was so drunk. I just went, we finished now. There are no answers. There are no winners and there are no losers. There's no losers. So he never lets me forget that.
No.
But used to do a lot of quizzes, awareness raising on social media, meeting people on social media that had lost loved ones, making those connections with people. Some of my best friends now were sepsis survivors or people that have lost loved ones. And then we started to, Terence and Tracy works with them, they started to do support groups. So, because there's no support on the NHS for anyone who's been affected by sepsis. And some of the post-sepsis symptoms are very, they're because of the sepsis. So people are sort of wondering, why am I tired? Where's my energy gone? So they need to meet other people that have experienced the same so they can share their stories. So I started helping out with them there once a quarter. And then just over a year ago, we started monthly wellbeing walks.
Right.
So every month we go somewhere in South East Wales, and anyone that's had sepsis or been affected by it, basically we just go for like a half an hour walk.
How many turn up for that then? Is it well received?
Yeah, you can
well
have about 10.
Yeah.
Or you can have like maybe one or two.
Yeah.
There's been one where nobody turned up, but it's just that like giving people the opportunity to get out, fresh air, meet people. And we have like got a little community of people now. So
it's staggering how widespread the sepsis thing is. And actually, I think Terence and yourself in Wales and more widely in the UK, it is getting proper media profile now, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. It's definitely a lot more awareness, and people now can, if they've lost someone or they've had sepsis, they can just Google it and they will find something.
Yeah.
Whereas before, it was being recorded wrongly for a start. Mm. But like, when we didn't have the internet, people would have just been, wouldn't know where to go.
It's hard to imagine those days, isn't it?
And yeah.
You couldn't just Google it.
I remember them well.
Sadly, I do too. Yeah, so obviously, so what's the next step then? I mean, there's talk of a sort of Welsh Government-backed awareness campaign.
Yeah, so I guess there are two strands to it. We would like a Welsh Government-backed campaign, but also I think that what Terence and clinical people want is a register of people that have had sepsis, because otherwise you're not really aware of what the longer term effects are and stuff like that. So yeah, government campaign and the registry of sepsis survivors. So we've got a petition that we plan to give to the new First Minister. I'm not sure if we'll make it on their first day, but that's the plan.
Yeah.
I think you need something like 50 signatures for it to be debated. Okay. And we've got like well over 800 online, and then we've got paper ones as well.
What kind of responses are you getting? Obviously, you and Terence will be putting feelers out.
Do you know the best thing that we did was at the beginning of the summer, we went into town and we had the petition and we had the banner and we were just stopping people, and people generally just didn't want to it didn't matter what you were there for, they didn't want to speak to you. But afterwards we went for a drink in the beer garden of, I think it was Buffalo, and because we had the t-shirts on, somebody said to us, what is it? So we said, it's a petition. And this guy, who's only young, just goes, hey, listen up everyone in the pub, in the beer garden, these guys have got a petition and you all need to hear what they've got to say.
Fantastic.
So I stood up and said what it was, and then it got passed round the beer garden, and somebody had sepsis there.
Right.
So it was like, that was like brilliant.
Yeah. Isn't it funny that you go out in the street, no one wants to talk to you, yet you go in and people are immediately attracted to your t-shirts, aren't they?
After that, then we went to Gabalfa Community Centre to the bar in there.
Yeah.
And everyone in there signed it as well because they were asking about the t-shirts.
Yeah, because nailed on, given the awful stats, someone's going to be affected.
So, yeah, the response has been good. I mean, it is time consuming to keep it up.
Mm.
So we basically. It's about the publicity around it once we decide to submit it, I guess.
Mm.
And, you know, the Sepsis Trust in Wales is basically Terence and one other who's a part-timer.
Yeah.
So we need to, like, build the capacity of volunteers like me.
Yeah, sure, yeah. And so I'm fascinated then, because I've obviously met and know Terence. How does it work as a duo in terms of the campaigning?
We just... Do you know what? We never row about anything, generally, at all. We just get on with it. I think it's because it's something that we're both passionate about, and we both enjoy talking about it and doing things, and just get basically. If I have an idea, I'll just run it past him, but then I'll have probably set it up already.
Yeah. Actually, I've done it already. We're doing this. No, but I can imagine you must have brought a lot to the party, though.
Yeah.
Given your background in politics, about who you should speak to, how you should do it. Is that how it's panned out?
Terence already speaking to the right people.
Yeah.
So when Terence sort of started in Wales, he already worked out Public Health Wales weren't talking to someone else.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's had meetings with Vaughan Gathin and Mark Drakeford when he was when he was Health Secretary. So he's in the right rooms. It's just that tiny little bit of a nudge... around the campaign and the registry, really.
So, big question then, who would you like to be Welsh leader then? Who, from a sepsis perspective, who would be...
Well, I don't think either of them... basically, none of them respond to my tweets to do with sepsis. Yeah,
right.
None of them. I mean, Vaughan won't back a campaign at the moment.
Mm.
I'm not sure about if Mark would.
Right.
It's one of those things, isn't it? Because they're going to have so many competing priorities from the beginning that it is going to be like, right, you know, regroup and have a think about what the best thing is to do next.
Sense,
you know, yeah. But yeah, I don't know, you know, I'll be voting for Mark because his background is quite similar to mine, apart from he's a professor and I'm not, but he's got the background of probation and youth justice. And I know that if you've done that, you've seen real people.
Yeah.
And the other two haven't.
Yeah. By definition, he can't have helped but see.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
What
yeah.
we see
yeah.
every day.
Yeah.
What you saw in your.
In social work,
in
yeah.
In social work, yeah. Yeah. Oh, well. That's good. That's good. Tell us a bit about life in Cardiff, because obviously this is the Cardiff podcast.
Mm-hmm.
I view it that you love the city dearly. What is it about Cardiff that makes it a special place? And tell us a little bit about your life and Terence's life here.
So I was brought up in Cardiff, in Llanishan.
Mm-hmm.
So I went to Catholic school in Llanishan. When I started there, it was called Our Lady Queen of the Universe, or for short, OLQU.
Yeah.
And then it got changed to Christ the King.
Mm.
And then I went to Corpus Christi, so the old one, which is now knocked down.
Yeah.
And then after uni, I came back to Cardiff and I settled and I had my kids and everything. Cardiff for me is used to be going down my nan's on a Saturday, seeing all my aunties and uncles and my cousins, being able to get from one part of the city to the other really quickly on the bus.
Yeah, oh God, those days are long.
Yeah, like when we had a bus station, you'd like,
yeah.
That would, so our life, I guess, well, we do a lot of work stuff.
Yeah.
So if it's not sepsis, then we're probably doing something else to do with a charity or something. But we like going out for meals. The days of going to the Loop and Astoria and places like that, I don't think my body could take it anymore. But we love living in Land of North. Yeah. So Terence is born and bred. I'm an incomer, so I moved here into...
Terence from Land of North?
Yeah, he's around the corner, yeah.
Right, okay.
Caldy Road.
Right.
I moved in 2002 when I was pregnant with Ashley.
Yeah.
Moved on to Station Road opposite the Pineapple and then moved around here 4 years ago. I just love being right by the Taff Trail.
Yeah,
yeah, just cycle, walk. Just love Land of North anyway as a place, as a community. I mean, I love that I represented it, even though it wasn't for the full time. I did love it.
Yeah.
The people are great, you know, everyone knows each other.
Do you miss that aspect of the councillor work?
Yeah, but I still got it, really, because you know everybody.
Yeah.
And there's always something going on. There's always we're always asking people to get involved in something, or you know. So I still have that, I guess, but I just haven't got the hassle to go with it.
No. And is it the case you get? Because you know, you have to have your phone number on the council website. Was it the case people rang sort of 24 hours?
No, not for
really?
Me. No, because a lot of stuff is done online. And we used to do a lot of door knockings to go out and see people. There was once I remember when a couple to knock my door on a Sunday evening and I was like, I'm in my pyjamas. Like, can you just not wait?
Yeah.
But they just thought they'd take the chance. But generally, no, not really. And I'm quite good at organising my time anyway. So if you know that somebody's phoning and you're going to have to do something with it, you just timetable it in for a time that you can take that call. And you've got to be realistic with your time, haven't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And speaking of voluntary roles, you're very much involved now with the Welsh Boxing Association.
I am.
Yeah, tell us a bit about how that came about. It's brilliant to have a woman on that board, isn't it?
It is, yeah, I'm the only woman.
Yeah.
So Welsh Amateur Boxing Association is the national governing body for amateur boxing in Wales.
Mm-hmm.
There's over 100 boxing clubs. And basically, before I joined the board, their board had been disbanded. So they were looking at, they were bringing it back up to speed. I just saw an advert and it was for a non-executive director specifically around safeguarding and equalities.
Yeah.
So I was like, I love boxing.
Yeah.
I've never boxed myself, but I love watching boxing. I used to watch with my dad on a Saturday night when it used to be free.
Yeah.
And obviously, I was a social worker and now I work in equalities.
Yeah.
I was like, God, I think that's mine.
Yeah.
So went
written
in.
For you, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. So I went in for the interview. I knew that it was competitive. There was definitely another candidate. I got it, and then I was so I've been there since January. And then I became an executive director last month, so that means I get voting rights. But you know what the thing for me was, you know, I knew it was going to be male dominated, so I knew sort of more what to expect and how people treat you and stuff like that. And I said to the board, you know, I said, walking in here into a male dominated organisation, you know, I was obviously going to be very heightened to certain things. I was like, do you know what, you've been so inclusive.
Yeah.
Like, I really, you know, I wouldn't just get women to sit on that board if it wasn't a nice environment, but I would happily tell women to apply for any posts that come up there. Yeah,
that's
definitely
so great to hear.
I know, it really is.
And I don't mean this in a negative way, you wouldn't necessarily expect that from a boxing association.
No, so it is obviously stereotyped as a match, obviously macho male.
Yeah.
But the board, you know, I can't knock it at all, and it is very much, they have appointed people for specific skills.
Yeah.
So they've got a legal board member,
finance,
governance, and, you know, safeguarding the qualities is up there with those key things, which is just for an NGO, it's just brilliant.
Yeah, it's fantastic, isn't it? It sounds like they're quite strategic then in what they're trying to do.
Yeah, so, they want to do a lot more now around community stuff and the benefits of boxing in for communities. We're doing something around mental health and boxing clubs as well.
Right.
So on the 17th of November, which is next week, isn't it?
It It is indeed.
Yeah. We've got an event at Lan Rhymney Boxing Club about boxing for better mental health. So Lee Bridgman from the Blues is going to come to do some stuff. We've got someone from Time to Change coming as well. Mm-hmm. And it's just the first step around talking about mental health and the benefits that fitness and boxing can bring. And also, you know, helping in terms of maybe signposting or just being able to have that conversation with coaches. And they're all volunteers, all volunteers. If someone comes into the boxing club and they're not acting the way they usually are, just have a think. Is there something going on in their life, and can you have that chat with them? And if there is, do you know how to signpost it accordingly?
Just spotting the signs and what
to do. Yeah, exactly, So 21st of November, Wabba is signing the Time to Change pledges for employer and young people. So I've had both the action plans approved, so I'll be working doing some work around that then.
Brilliant.
Afterwards.
What are essentially then the benefits of boxing in the community?
Well, giving young people a place to go, it's cheap. So like boxing in Lan Rhymney is £1.50, whereas if they were to go up the leisure centre, it's probably near enough for fiver.
Yeah, right.
Good in terms of routine, gives you routine. Mental health wise, obviously, like the release of endorphins and the time to think and stuff like that. There's a lot of stuff that goes on in London in terms of keeping kids out of gangs. The benefits are endless if you've got the structure and the capacity to be able to do it. And I guess that's what I'm really interested in, is how we can get the sort of equality stuff and inclusion stuff that is, you know, throughout places like Action for Children, how we can get it through boxing and raise the profile as well.
And have you noticed, is there an increase in women getting involved in boxing?
Yeah, definitely. So Wales had two Commonwealth medals. Yeah. One was gold, one was silver or bronze. And then there's Stacey Copeland in Manchester. So yeah, definitely. Yeah. Boxing Pretty, which is run from Lan Rhymney, that's with all women. And that was set up on the back of the coach having suffered domestic violence.
Right.
So it's about rebuilding confidence and all that sort of stuff. And her classes are packed.
Yeah.
They take the kids, they can leave the kids in the pushchair. It's brilliant.
Yeah, it's really empowering stuff, isn't
Yeah.
it? Really empowering
Really
stuff.
Good. But I mean, I love boxing.
So your role in that, on that board, has changed, hasn't it?
So I was a non-executive director. So now I'm an executive. I get voting rights in things.
Yeah.
So
how much are you enjoying that role?
I love it.
Incredible.
I love it, And again, it's meeting people, meeting different people, different backgrounds. And like if I've done an action plan or something and I present it to the board, they're genuinely interested and they genuinely ask questions and they congratulate you. They say, that's great, thanks very much. You know, and it's like, it's really nice.
You feel appreciated.
You feel appreciated. You feel like people respect you. They respect you as for your profession, and that's really important.
Yeah, it really is. So I'm a bit exhausted by all the stuff you do. I mean, it's a very young woman still. What? How do you see your future panning out? What do you want to achieve?
I would definitely like to stay in the charity sector. So I don't see me moving out of that unless it was into sport, maybe sporting something like an NGO or something. I would like to be a chief executive of a charity. May as well aim high, isn't it?
Absolutely.
I did go for a secondment in work for a director post, and I was appointable. But some of the feedback was we weren't sure you would toe the party line, which I thought was quite funny. Well, that's the thing. You don't want everyone. You don't want people.
Like,
to,
yes, people.
You don't want people to conform to a certain thing.
To make things change, you've got to.
Yeah.
A bit,
but it did give me a bit of a spring in my step because I was appointable.
Yeah.
But they just, you know, they went for a safe pair of hands, I guess.
Yeah.
I love the charity sector. I love the equality stuff.
Yeah.
I think I'm quite good as well at comms.
Mm-hmm.
Whether that be face to face or social media, just people really more than anything.
Oh, that's fantastic. Well, I think we've packed an awful lot in there, which is that's just generally life at the moment. But no, that's fantastic. So thank you so much for coming on the Cardiff Podcast, and please come on again,
because
there's going to be other things going on in your life. I've got no doubt about that.
Yeah, definitely.
In the future, so please come on again, and thank you so much.
Thank you.
Siobhan Corrier there with a fascinating insight into local politics and her life campaigning in Cardiff. You might need to lie down after that, but hopefully you also found it inspirational and instructive in how you can make a difference without having to toe a party line. Before I sign off, it's been great to see this podcast has listeners in countries all over the world, and I'd love to see exactly where you're listening to the Cardiff podcast from. So please pop up any pictorial evidence on the podcast Twitter feed at Cardiff Pod, if you can be asked, of course. And also, if you're enjoying the Cardiff podcast, please review and rate on your podcast provider. It'll really help us spread the word. But for now, thanks for listening.